the 这个也是挺关键的，他说的话我听到了，很多人问，那这地方能不能发展？这几个区域的特点，怎么去理解？这个怎么样？这个可以怎么理解？难道有什么有政策的人能做出来？那我们去做的大事的东西，大家要真的把我们的事情真的做成一件事，真的在做，还是说在什么什么什么什么什么？那么很多很多的关于人的或者的什么，那么的什么，那么的什么什么什么，都有什么，或者是什么，或者是什么什么什么。
the church that I know and the area that I know, they very much blend. Both of us I don't remember that word, but we're not even nice people. I've got to tell you, all the hypocrites are in the church. You know? I mean, I'm very grateful for that. Some of my greatest program mates have been doing some of you assholes. I mean, that's just the way it is. Of course, I got out of the tools because you don't turn out to be in that demon that way. You're out there putting that sprinkle in just a little weird way. You think you can roll up on that. You know, that's the way it's got to be. But, it's been, I've been there since then. So, I learned conditional love from my mama. I learned conditional love from the church. And that didn't make me an alcoholic. No, I will tell you, the big book is probably one of the most prophetic books of science you've ever read. I've never seen a book that is so profound, not just because I find all of my answers in it, but the stuff in that book that is written so simply that it took medical science and theological science and philosophical science years to catch up with. Because it was written by great observers and great reporters. Bill Wilson first taught us we have progressive illness. He first taught us that young people would drink differently from old people, that women would be affected much more quickly than men, physically, from their alcoholism. They were teaching us this in 1938 when he wrote this thing. Medical science cannot prove all this. I'm fully skilled, referred to one of the experts. Well, I guess I'm considered that. Because I'm a doctor, I spent considerable time practicing family medicine for 25 years. I practiced addiction medicine for since 1987. I'm on a program that gets doctors who treat if they have alcohol and drug problems. I work with the industry shelter at home in Google. And I've seen tons and tons of stuff, and I can put on this wall all of the formulas we have today that tell us that we are bodily and mentally different. The real alcoholic is bodily and mentally different, right out of my textbook. And I can tell you how we're not any different. And I can tell you I can work this program perfectly. I can be the same that I'm trying to be every day. That's the meaning of bullshit that I told you. That's what I'm being the same. And I'm never going to be able to drink successfully. I know it. I'm having real curious doubts. How do you know that, man? How do you know that? Well, prove it to me. Okay. Let me show you my resume on being naked in jail. That's just where we start, you know. And being naked on the grave of Oras. Let me show you just exactly how this works. This is where the insanity is. And I'm bodily different. We're born to Fort Low. If you're not talking about and when we drink, we fill up the gas tank. And we keep drinking, and it all drains out the bottom. And once cucumber gets bigger, we're never a cucumber again. That's an old saying, but it's a good one. If you have any doubts about that, then call me at home, and I'll give you the reference literature. If you're just lying, you have to say why. And some of us are just trained, or some of us just have an active mind. We're always going to say why. This, at least for me, this book and this program has answered right every question I've ever had about everything about alcoholism and spirituality and the God of my understanding. Everything. I can't wait to see what's revealed next. But if it's easy like what's been revealed so far, there is no way to measure what the joy will be. But the joy of his atonement. I'll give you the references on if you're still struggling with it. And it's not a bad thing to struggle with, but Wilson struggled with it. He kept getting drunk until Superworth told him what he was. He even took that to Bob Smith, who was a doctor, and that started AG. He went to him, and the first thing he said was, I said, well, I drink like he was crazy. And I act like he when I drink, which is crazy. But here's why I do that. No, we're born to court love, and we are different. And that's just the way it is, bodily and mentally different. Alcohol and drugs were no problem for me in high school. They were no problem for me in college. When I went to college, I started drinking in Paul and I drank a couple of beers and sang gospel songs with my good friends, and we go on the novel and do things like that. We're the big kids. We're out in college, and when they did the first semester in my freshman year, and drank like a lot of freshmen do, I'd just go down and drink all kinds of beer and get drunk. And then we'd get on the back of a flatbed truck, and we'd drive over to the women's campus and serenade the girls and take off all my clothes every time I did that. Nobody else got naked, just me. I'd just stand there and just sing them songs. It's a small house, about 500 people. What I like to say is that I never got any cards or letters or nobody called me for a date, but the dean was just in the dean brought me in. The dean brought me in and said, Bernstein, we don't know what's wrong with you, but you can't keep taking your clothes off, and we think when you drink, you know that. But so I quit drinking, but I didn't get in the right way. And I went to medical school in 1958 at University of Louisville. Now I'm a car and can't be promoted. I didn't really get a shotgun and I poured whiskey and I'm drinking a lot. That's just what I thought. But the first 12 years of my story, I didn't have to do that. I thought I had to do drugs. And I do not apologize for telling this story because it's a story that I choose to believe is what God gave me. It's the story that I believe for me to leave any part of it. I just ask God what He thinks is important and what isn't. If you expect me to argue about sin as a purpose, you are wrong. If you expect me to get into a debate about it, you're wrong. I do not know the total answer on that. I do know that if you read enough of our literature, you'll understand about, or at least I hope you will come to a conclusion on what you should say or what I should say and what I shouldn't say. I would hope that you would do that. I've checked in New York, I've checked in Wisconsin, I've checked everywhere. I'm going to apologize for this part of the story because it's what I've been doing. It is not bad yet, in my opinion. And I will talk about it. My freshman year in medical school, I was flying apart. Couldn't study. Somebody came up and gave me this pill called Amphetamine. Said, take it, but I have to stay away to study. I didn't take it. I didn't even know what it was. And when I took it, my whole world changed. And within less than 2 months, I was taking it daily, and I took it daily for the rest of my career in medical school. 2 weeks before graduation, my senior year, I got kicked out of medical school. And in an amphetamine rage, I hit one of my professors. They thought that was bad form. They took me down and talked to the dean of medical school and the head of the department of psychiatry. I said, what's wrong with you? I said, do you know this? And said, do you believe that? I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, dean, we'll get you some help. What are you going to do? We're going to put you in intensive psychiatric therapy. So I saw two psychiatrists for a year and a half, one in Nashville, one in Louisville. Didn't take any drugs or anything. Didn't take any drugs or read all my notes or read all my textbooks, did everything I needed to do. They let me back in medical school. I walked back to the general hospital there where we trained, and in less than an hour, I was coming out on amphetamine again. And just sat on the steps of the school and cried because I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't intend to when I walked in. Didn't even think about it. But I walked in and walked right straight down to the OBGYN clinic where we treated women who got any Jewish weight with amphetamine to burn their appetite. A water pill to get rid of their fluid and a low salt. That's what we did to people who gained weight. And we had tons of samples. I just walked down there. I mean, it was just like they put me on robo. I walked down there. Cocaine taught us a lot. Cocaine taught us a lot about this type of mental activity. Alcohol is a crib shot. Cocaine slammed up. They both get to 2 points, but they just get there differently. That's what makes alcohol so subtle and cocaine not so at all. But the bottom line is the way the brain hooks back into that. We call it time off all those years ago. And we come along and have to learn about cocaine and alcohol and to understand what that world was talking about. And that's what it was. You know what was wrong with me. You may not follow it, but I'll tell you exactly what I know today. It's something else will be revealed. Psychiatry brought me knowledge. I'm not an anti-psychiatry. I'm anti-ignorance. And I've dedicated the last almost 25 years of my life to educating a medical professor. And I think I've done about as good a job as any woman in the human surrounding me can do, at least in our own home community, to teach to eradicate this ignorance that was so prevalent and is still much more prevalent than I'd like it, than I'd like to hope that it will be, that it will continue to change. But I'm not anti-therapy, not by any means, not by any stretch of imagination. Psychiatry brought me knowledge, but it didn't bring me spiritual experience. And if you read their contract, that's not what they say they're going to do. So it's not much sense in getting gifts to such categories that they're bringing you spiritual experience, but they can tell me they don't want to walk in the door unless they profess to be some form of spiritual psychiatrist. In any event, my classmates enabled me. I graduated still hot. I was in my internship in residency and interrupted it 4 times, put me in the hospital, straight down on the floor and straight down. It's crazy as hell. I mean, really sometimes. I got out of medical school around my residency. I was trying on amphetamine, got pissed at the Vietnam War. I thought it was a total travesty that we should do what we should do with it. Straight out in the doctor's lounge one day, I was fishing Dr. Warren, one of my friends, said, "Do you want to get me home?" And I thought, "I've got that special name." So I went out and got the car and drove to Frankfurt, joined the Army. Didn't call my wife, didn't call my office, just went and joined the Army. And went down there to Dr. Brady, came back as Captain Brady, and he told me that. That's pretty much the way my life runs today. It's load, shoot, and sickness and pain. You know, they say I have an impulse disorder. Oh, little boy, if it smells good and dries fast, you grab it or bite it, and it's precious. So it went on me, almost got put in bed and work, and took an amphetamine, and I was in charge of the dispensary, which meant I was in charge of the pharmacy, and I was like, well, that's just great fun. And then came to me, I almost put in bed and work, and I quit taking it again once he explained to me what he's going to do to quit. I could always quit with the drugs, payments coming out, and all, and I couldn't quit. Nothing, the consequences didn't matter anymore. But I always quit with the drugs if they could keep me out of money. Came home at 69, got back on the drugs, had a gallbladder attack. My surgeon was a good friend of mine then and today, and him turned into a good friend of mine then and today. We sat down in the old Rock Methodist Hospital in Louisville and prayed that I could take him. So that was my last symptom in 1969. I'm sure the prayers that a lot of you did, it's been interesting to watch that journey. I always like to think the miracles being a part of the circle. And it helps me realize just how I don't see it at the time that needed it to happen. I see this part of the miracle, and it doesn't make any sense to me. Just wait till the circle closes. Because the prayers were there, and the prayers worked, but they took kind of a weird way to get there. But I started drinking. And I drank for the first 4 years before an alcoholic. Now, there's a new definition of alcoholism medically that would care to a clever man as an alcoholic, they call it alcohol use disorder. But I can drink by any stretch of imagination that you would drink, or that we would drink by an alcoholic. Of course, I drank a lot and drunk a lot, but I was functional. My wife would have told you that. But I was functional because of really good solid medical practice. First 4 years with an alcoholic. I never thought about drinking when I got up in the morning. I always drank that, but I never got looking forward to drinking. Or not, I just didn't think of it. The next 3 years was pure alcoholic. Not because of the amount that I consumed, but the obsession that I had. When I got up in the morning, I knew when my first drink was going to be. It was going to be at 4:30. And then I sat down and I practiced at 4 o'clock. I had my phone set up at the river, right over to 7-Eleven, got me a quart of beer, drank that on the way home, about 25 miles, right? Got out of there, my scotch and water, and got smooth. You remember smooth, the eight minutes of smooth? Okay, you remember, that's why you're in this room. And the reason you're in this room is because that's about the only time under stress in the river was 8 minutes of smooth. There will come a day we'll be able to bring to our conscious memory with sufficient force. That's right out of there is a solution. We really realize that we forget if we build a defense around us. We forget. We never, at least I did. And I know most of y'all did. Or you wouldn't be here because you went on and drank through that. You went on and drank through that. We call it medicine state conditioned learning. State conditioned learning. In this program, we just say we forget, and that covers it all. We forget. Each time I walk in one of these rooms, I'm reminded of what I am. Because if I'm not reminded of what I am, then I lose who I am. And I don't walk into these rooms chained anymore because you taught me how to deal with the shame. I found, at least for me, that sustained shame is about the most blatant example of a rejection of a higher power in our community. How many people do we deal with this young man? Bradshaw is a male fortune all the time about toxic shootings. I'm not saying that Bradshaw. I don't care one way or another. But I do know that toxic shame may be present because we ought to be ashamed. At least I should have been ashamed of what I did, because I did some shit that I talked all over every one of my values and every one of your values. So why wouldn't I feel ashamed of that? But if I'm ashamed X number of months later, then I'm not in this program. I'm just going to meetings. I'm just going to meetings. And it took me years to be brought into touch with that. Years, not months, not days, years, we brought him to touch with that. Last year, my grandpa was addicted. I drank a quart of whiskey and I never drank in the office, and that's why I told myself I wasn't out of time. And I didn't do that, and I couldn't quit drinking. My first wife took me out of the house in 1975, so then the scenery was a marriage made in hell. We both made out of dependency. I grew up in a church where she was sleeping with my new man. And I slept with her one time, and she had a second belief system. We married, we hated each other. We hated each other for the first time that we ever saw each other. It was one of those malignant marriages made in hell, nurtured on the bed, back off the ship. I mean, that's just exactly what that message was. We see it repeatedly in this program, you know, 5, 6, and 7 times. It's a wonderful thing to really understand what we're seeing in emotional sobriety of that kind of relationship. I've been looking for mama all my life. She carried me to make me feel special. That's when I broke apart in my hair and make me feel special. And all you gotta do is just chuckle me under the chin and tell me under the sleigh, you ever had a license to this, you get in my car, you get in my house, you get me anything else you want, you know, it's all great stuff. And sometimes we don't even have to talk about being a good lady, we just talk about how much you'd like to be a good lady. I mean, thank you, you can really all that physical exercise and just sit there and tell each other how good it was. And instead of it's called oral sex where you just talk about life. I'm pretty good, not just driving around talking to you. I'm talking about all things I've never even heard before. So I ran around one night, drove some sports cars, and did all the things that I call gave me the freedom to do that I really did not really feel it was right to do. And I met Casey, who was my wife, and one of the top students that I've ever met on the face of this earth. She and I have been married 28 years. Just now, when we met, we drank together, drank the drink, and we had a really wild time, about a year, maybe a year and a half, and Casey's 14 years younger than me. She didn't get sick. Certainly not sick of me. I'm not really sick. I'm bad and sick. The last 6 months of my drinking, I would get up in the morning and pick out a 24-hour cycle, pick out the road, and I'd get up at 11 in the morning. I couldn't get up any earlier than I was still fine. I don't even know if I want to see it. It was just something. In fact, I tried not to go to sleep, but for a year, I went to sleep and wake up, and today was starting again, and I knew what today was going to be. So I tried not to go to sleep. But I finally just did the past 100 days, about 7 or 8 in the morning, I'd get up at 11, take a bath, and stop shaking. I'd go to my office and work for 3 hours, and normally it would take me 8 to 10 hours. And I'd actually go to the office first, see my patients, and go to the office and my patients, run back out of the hospital and make rounds. Let one of the real doctors see me race on in case they have a scotch and water and steak and baked potato and sit there and I start drinking. I eat, say my liver. You know, as a doctor, I knew I had say my liver. But I drink a quart of whiskey and listen to my records. And then she'd come in there the night before I go to bed and she'd say, can't you sleep today? And I'd say, you know what? I'm driving crazy today. I'm crazy. I'll make you crazy. And she'd just cry and go on in there and go to bed. And I'd just do that. One morning she left me on to work and I was getting ready to get out of the chair. And that's the day I knew. So just refer to it as a moment of clarity. Whatever it may be referred to, there was that moment, that wonderful moment when I knew it was over. I didn't have clues to do that. I didn't think there was any help for me. I had 9 years of psychiatric therapy. I've been beaten in 5 churches. And I didn't think there was any help for me. happy you know how to do it. And you were sitting there thinking, maybe I could smoke weed. And I thought, well, you couldn't drink, you can't take amphetamine for reasons you don't know, understand none of this stuff works in you. And I did what I was doing. I walked in the bedroom, got on the 12-gauge shotgun, and put it in my mouth, and I was higher than I believed in God. God was sent across God. It was like Charles and Heston lived on the earth. As soon as I pulled that trigger, I was going home. As soon as I got home, I stopped. And that's what I wanted. I just wanted the pain to stop. I just wanted to quit hurting people. Everybody I touched to hurt. Touch me, you believe it. I mean, it's just the way it was. I just hurt everybody. I don't want to do that. I really didn't. As I said, I'm sorry to do that because, God, if you don't want me to do this, you've got to tell me why. My mom and dad will be better off without me. My patients will be better off without me. Casey will be better off without me. And I thought of my children. They were young babies at that time. About 12 and 6. My daughter's 45 now. The years went out of the donut streets after I hold the word. My daughter's 45. She's been in the age 25 years. My youngest son, 39, has been in the age for 22 years. And at that time, they were just little children. And I remember thinking then, I've been in practice long enough that I'd seen adults come in and payload on their spear. But what if mommy or daddy or brother or sister, why did they kill themselves? Why didn't they love them enough? What have they done wrong? I'm not going to leave those children in that shit. But years from now, they wonder why daddy did it. Why did he blow his ear off? Why didn't daddy blow his ear off? You know, at that moment of complete self-absorption, because that's what suicide is, and that's not a retarded statement. At that moment of complete self-absorption, where the I have the power. Power. One of the strongest statements in our case world for me is lack of power that is our dogma. Lack of power that everything I do today, at least most of the time, is based on being, first of all, aware of the fact that I don't have the power to do anything. I've got the responsibility to do virtually everything that I've learned in this program is my responsibility. But I don't have the power. It's a critical differential that I watch people continue to get drunk over. There is a source of power. When we come in, if we go to meetings, they have to tell us to get the power, but we do this, we get up, we become this, we do this, we do that. Somewhere in there, the stepping off on the shore for me, which is very slow and very much an educational process, was recognizing no. Everything that I've ever been a part of in building for God's recovering army has been with His power and my willingness to use every tool that I've been given. So at that moment of complete self-absorption, my God let me think of another human being. 29 years later, I'm absolutely and totally convinced this is not about me. This is about my getting ready for you when you get ready to come to us. Now, that's not unique for me. That's right out of our book. Our primary purpose is to put ourselves to be a mindful service to God. Why am I up here this morning? Oh, I love to see y'all. Some of you people, I don't get to see that often. My God, this is like a homecoming. Not only just the speakers, but some of the other people I met over the years. I'd be just happy being at home, going to one of my meetings. Not that I'm not over here. But I'm here because I was asked. And for some reason, maybe just me, but somebody needs to hear what I'm saying. The rest of you may be asleep. But if I'm at least trying to tell the truth and be honest, by God, I better hear it. He also tells me it's an interesting thing. Our primary purpose is to fit ourselves to a master service. It doesn't say to be a master
service. Because the fit is for two years, I never read the book and never did the step, but 7 years, 8 months, I wasn't asked to do that. people off the street, what do you describe people who haven't said to me and gone and told me that they haven't said to me, get me there alone, and got the hell away from me, and I'm supposed to take it with me. And the whole group that I'm talking to, it's like we have to tell us that it was wonderful, but we did not get grounded in where was the power, what was the kind of, what was the spirit that was in the hand of to read, I would sit next to the book. I'd go in my reading office and get on my knees. The best thing to do is talk to me, Jim, from the gym, which is like, get up on me, do meditation, get me, pray the prayer, get Jesus Christ to feel, get me all sorts of things.
When you want to share, you're going to do that, you're going to do that, you're going to do that. 15 minutes later, two hours later, sitting with the owners of two of them, to get up on to the edge, to get up to 4, 5, 6 times a day for almost 6 months to 9 months at home. The fellow said that when my mom died when I was 8 months sober, I told you the relationship I had with my mother. And I called her and she died of cancer for like 2.5 years of death. Every time she went to the hospital in the last 6 months, which was the first day of the week, I would jump in the car, but I couldn't take my house home to see Mama. And this was on Friday. And they called me, she went to the hospital at 7 p.m. in the morning. First time I ever did, she died that night. No, she died that afternoon. And I called Jim on Friday afternoon, told him what happened. He drove out to my office. This man was 20 years older than me, with about 6'5", was about 260. He came in my office, sat in my chair. I came in with a white coat and stethoscope on, climbed up in his lap, 41 years old, and he rocked me. He rocked me. That was my mama. The fellowship was indescribably wonderful. It was the worst of times for AA, and missed him to rewriting it because we never read the book. Their marching orders were, don't drink, go to bed, get a sponge, you take what's wrong with you, you'll tell you what to do, and you go take the drug. And that's what we did. My first 4 step in 4 years was a 300 questionnaire that he wrote out. My second 4 step in 8 years was a 300 questionnaire he got from Hazel. And that's what I did. But I was all over AA. All over it, running around and talking. I got on the circuit when I was about 7 years sober, running around. And hell, I was in some of those cases. They're wonderful. They had nothing to do with my experience or anything. Hopefully, they had a thousand ones. I mean, they're better than what I do today because they were funnier, they were weirder, they were hungry. But it wasn't me. It was Father Mark, Sandy Beach, Cliff Roach, it's Clancy. You run through the names of all the judges, and that's what involved in one meeting. I can go through it. Well, my story. I didn't have a story yet, but I had an ability to intervene. And that is what I did know. That and some other things that were pretty strange, but not bad and not malicious, not contrived, and nothing that didn't hurt anybody except me. I got pretty crazy. But 10 years in sobriety, I did some very self centered things in life to destroy my marriage. I could destroy me. And I went to my sponsor and told him what I was doing, and he called my wife and told her, I just told him what I was thinking about. He called my wife and told her. I found out at that time that sponsors are not perfect, they don't walk on water. We're all drunks, we're just wandering away from being in a mental institution or a psychiatric ward or in some treatment center. And by the last sponsor, I tell him up front real quick. She said, hey, walk on water, you better show me where the sun is showing. He said, I don't walk on water. I've never been without a sponsor longer than 4 months. I've had 3. And I wouldn't be without a sponsor. Wouldn't be without a sponsor. But I'll tell you, sometimes we deal with sponsors. And it's really, 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 really dangerous. And I don't expect anyone to know that I'm not God. And stay exceptionally close to my support system from sponsor to my select. Get really up in the deep water of life, you know, just my personal experience. Really, that's my opinion about something. I'm sure as hell for them, but I try my best to step away from them. At that 10 years when that event happened, this first sponsor had ruled my life for 10 years, and praise God. I called to this man's grave and I cried and I thanked him. He was a sociopathic, crazy son of a bitch. Now, I don't mean he was a tough sponsor. I mean he was a sociopathic, crazy son of a bitch. But I mean he was my crazy sociopathic son of a bitch. And Jesus, God's greatest gift to me to come with a man of this kind of strength and character to get this right for more than 20 or 30 years. Because I was a doctor. I considered at least 40 to 50 people a day who made me die, who absolutely told me I was the most wonderful thing on earth. That's the wife who told me that. I mean, I saw all the character defects that needed to be told. And this man was totally unimpressed with me. And completely impressed with himself. Yeah, absolutely. And there will be people who say, why did you stay with that crazy son of a bitch? I didn't stay with him that long. God left me with him that long. And then when I left, I went and talked to a little fish man came up and I was just going crazy. He gave me the medication. And he said, would you listen to these things that are good and Joe's trying to take some good work on the first night? And I listened to those tapes and I realized the program that I didn't have. I had 11 copies made, 12 of us sat down, and for a year, we met once a week with our big group and Joe and Charlie's tapes, and we went through four steps together. And we came back to the first seven chapters. We were the second big book study group in 1987. And right now, there are at least 40 or 50 going on, and you say, well, I don't care about studies, that's okay. Whatever you feel, whatever you think, I'm telling you my experience, strength, and hope. And that was a critical piece of my experience, strength, and hope. And what has happened after that in our community that I think has brought us back, at least across the services of rural, or the territory of rural, and looking at the steps. I believe it took 100%. I believe the 12 steps are the program. I believe they're nurtured in a textbook. It tells us, not only tells us what they are, but explains some of the things that are incredibly deep and profound and wonderful. And then it routes that into the rest of the book, which tells us how to use those steps in our families and the rest of our lives, the whole thing is there. And until we have, if we have, what I have found in 29 years of this relationship, if we have a threat to Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a threat. I promise you, it ain't coming from therapy. It ain't coming from any other resource. Now, we have to really pass on a message to each other. The high threat will come from most institutions from inside. And another one of the reasons I got off the circuit was I was not sure that I wasn't crazy. I was not sure that I wasn't saying things that needed to be said and said. That's one of the main reasons. But since that time, my prayers have been very deep and very profound. In fact, I'll come back to talking about my experience from the coach. Because I do need to say that I've got an opinion about everything from root rot to Iraq. And I know that I have an opinion. I'm convicted about it. If you want to talk to me after this video, I'll sit and tell you every damn thing you need to know about every damn thing in the world to say. But also, I stood in the podium and it got really goofy for me. When I got in the book, I found out that I had a lot of things. First of all, I found out my problems are alcohol. My phone calls and a lot of problems. I keep friends like normal people, and I'd be crazier than I am probably if I were drinking again. I don't know if I live very long. But alcohol wasn't my problems. Alcohol was simple, and alcohol was simple, real clear. But it was my medicine. I took alcohol, do an alcoholism. No question about it. It's not an original thought of me, but it certainly is a thing that I've seen. I drank to do an alcoholism. And when they took away my medicine because it quit working and made me sick, then I was back for my alcoholism. And as I read through the book, I was impressed with the thing. I don't know that I can say this with enough conviction. But I found that my problem was my thinking. If you had taught me to stop the drinking and don't deal with the thinking, I would stop the drinking. They told me that thinking was the thing that's always thinking. It precedes the drinking. And Wilson called it a peculiar mental twist. A peculiar mental twist. It is so critical that I began to try and discover for me what the drinking was. Wilson didn't talk about it much except to me. He was in the store and more than my father. That's the closer he did for me. So I began to live around about this is really important stuff. But I was young in the program, I just started to have some kids not coming in. And
I'm going to tell you that you didn't know how to do it. really want to make money who will bring it to me. I promise you, I wanted to put up a real great person for 20 years. We've been for 3 years. Don't know how I want to do it. Leave my name out. You can go to your bitch to run through. I'm really glad that you can walk around. You know, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Everyone in our problem, please do it. Think about it. You get to it as you talk to it. Every problem in our life is the first step.
Never, this is the year. You cannot be told they're working there.
and then you reject the truth in the same way. And you've already been down to two verses. If you want two verses, that big word, the big word, you see the first verse, you realize that the word is complete. But you still, the whole is making the whole of it. whether it is Thank you.